When it comes to identity politics and issues where prejudice, ignorance, and misinformation cloud or prevent discussion, what is the best way to reach across the divide and find common ground? Twitter? Unlikely. How about a face-to-face discussion? In 2014, a study showing that a 20-minute conversation with a gay or lesbian canvasser could reduce homophobia and get opponents of gay marriage to switch sides was published to a lot of fanfare, proof that human interaction and dialogue could influence public opinion. Maybe you heard about it on This American Life.
And here's just how real and free-floating this conversation is. At one point, the voter feels comfortable enough to ask him,
At what point did you realize you were gay? How does a child realize they're gay?
I can think back to third grade, and I had a crush on a boy in the class. Some people think that being gay is a choice. I was talking with a voter, and he was telling me he thought it was a choice, and I said my choice was to accept being gay, and because I tried to be straight. And that just wasn't working.
Well, yeah, if it doesn't work. it doesn't work.
And then at that point, the canvasser, Richard, very skillfully brings them back to the topic at hand.
So your vote has a lot of influence on how my life goes. I'm with somebody now.
That's a lot to think about, too, because, you know, after meeting you, you're a hell of a nice guy.
The study was later retracted after the author admitted to fabricating some of the results. It was kind of a big scandal. Now, a new study by the same researchers that debunked the first one may have succeeded in validating those early results, this time with the trans community. Josh Kalla is a PhD student from UC Berkeley and co-author of this new study called Durably Reducing Transphobia, a field experiment on door-to-door canvassing. Josh, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Virginia.
And the study tracks the work of David Fleischer, project director at the Leadership Lab, which organized the door-to-door canvassing featured on both studies. And David, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks, Virginia.
So, David, walk me through one of these interactions. You've just knocked on someone's door. Is there a script or training that you give to volunteers?
Yeah, there's extensive training because the single most important thing we do at the door, it's not what we tell the voter nearly so much as our building a rapport with them so that we can listen to what they have to say to us. And the conversation is most successful when we have voters be honest with us about their own prejudice.
So if you've just knocked on my door, what's the first thing you say?
Hi, Virginia. I'm Dave. I'm with the Leadership Lab, and we're talking to every registered voter in your neighborhood about an important issue. It's whether we're going to include transgender people in our non-discrimination laws. If you were going to make a decision about this, would you want to include transgender people in the non-discrimination laws or not include them in them?
Josh, you studied the results of those interactions, and what did you find? How effective is this method of interaction or intervention?
Yeah, we found that these types of door-to-door conversations were pretty incredibly effective at reducing transphobia, both in the short term and over a three-month period. We found that these interactions tended to reduce transphobia on the order of magnitude kind of comparable to how much homophobia decreased from 1998 to 2012.
Some of these canvassers are actually transgender. Some were not. Was that a factor in reducing or measuring transphobia among those participants?
Yeah, I think one of the most important parts of this study was that we found that both transgender and non-transgender canvassers were similarly effective at reducing transphobia. There was really no difference between whether or not you are part of the trans community or you were just an ally going out to help.
David, you actually did some of this canvassing. We started the conversation. Ever find yourself getting into a debate or an argument with somebody who answered the door?
No, because our approach isn't to argue. We're really genuinely curious about what the voter has to say. And when we come to the conversation in a non-judgmental way and with some humility, what's impressive to me is that so many people really want to talk with us, even people who start out in opposition, in fact, are conflicted. And as we talk it through and they get to reflect on their real lived experience, either with transgender people or with their experience when they've been judged unfairly for who they are, they realize that they actually want to be less prejudiced against transgender people.
Have you ever heard from anyone who answered the door that they actually never met or spoken to somebody who is from the trans community?
Overwhelmingly, that's the case. More than 90% of the people we talk with have never met a transgender person, and a significant number have never really had a conversation with an LGBT person. Remember, Virginia, we're going to neighborhoods where we know most people are against us. So we could go to other neighborhoods where people are already on our side, and perhaps it'd be more common for people to know transgender people there.
So you're targeting conservative voting districts or zip codes?
That's exactly right.
That's David Fleischer. He is the project director of the Leadership Lab. I'm speaking with him and Josh Kalla. He's co-author of a study that found that a 10-minute conversation can have measurable effects in reducing transphobia. And those conversations come courtesy of David's group. So in a similar study, this was published in 2014, that made big waves, and an episode of This American Life that a lot of our listeners may have heard, but then later retracted. Now, this was after you and your co-author, another grad student, discovered that some of the data had been fabricated. How did that affect your process moving forward? Why did you decide to do it again?
Well, we had discovered the fabrication while planning this study on reducing transphobia. We had to dig into the original data in order to do something really banal, which was just figure out how big this experiment had to be, how many conversations Dave and his volunteers needed to have. And then the process of planning this experiment is when we discovered those irregularities. And the experiment was already set, and Dave and his team were committed to having these conversations and doing this experiment regardless of what we found.
Was there some sense that this could work differently?
Yeah, I think when we discovered the irregularities in the original study, that did not disprove the effectiveness of the conversations. It just meant we had no experimental evidence on whether or not the conversations were effective. But that lack of evidence doesn't mean negative evidence. Instead, what we had were the experiences of Dave and his team and my co-author and I both also went canvassing with Dave and his team. So we really had these firsthand experiences that made it seem like there was something definitely happening at the doors and something worthwhile measuring.
David, given that for most people, going door to door is not an option to introduce themselves to somebody who thinks differently, how do you think that this lesson or these findings about empathy extend into other forms of communication? So social media, for example, or a family gathering?
Well, what I would suspect is that there's not a way to replicate this on social media, because you need to speak with people who disagree with you, and you need them to trust you. You need them to be honest. I don't know how you would be able to create that kind of an environment other than face-to-face. And then doing it with a family member at Thanksgiving is, I think, a possibility. And it would be really important that if somebody wanted to undertake that, there was some way in which they were doing this as part of a team, both so they could get training, and even though the conversation itself would be one-on-one, these are kind of scary conversations, and the stakes are even higher if you're talking to a family member than if you're talking with a stranger. So people would need to have a way to debrief with somebody afterwards, so they'd have support if they had a conversation that didn't change somebody's mind.
We're looking at a split of a public opinion anyway in polling in the United States, about 40% approval rating for incoming President Donald Trump, about 55% of people vehemently opposed. But without that training, without a team around you, how do you advise people to, you know, walk across that parking lot to someone with a different bumper sticker or something like that and have a dialogue? Is that a good idea?
Well, sure, it's a good idea. The biggest things to keep in mind are that you can get some training. There's going to be some training material online that we've just been lucky enough to create after I gave a TEDx talk that will go up in the next week or two. And the truth is, if you approach somebody with an attitude of real curiosity, you're going to get further than you might expect. And then finally, keep in mind that most people who polls show are strongly committed to one position or another, often that's a bit of an illusion. People are more complicated than that and are more conflicted than that. And once they know they can trust you to treat them decently and not judge, the possibility of having a good conversation is there. I grew up in Chillicothe, Ohio, a small town. And even when I was a boy, it was normal for neighbors to talk with each other about political disagreements. It's normal, actually, for one human being to talk with another human being and be affected by them.
Josh, how about for you? What's the next step after doing a study like this, finding these results, publishing them? Where do you go to now?
These results are incredibly promising. As Dave was saying, this is not new, having these types of face-to-face conversations. What is new is we just have evidence that these face-to-face conversations work. And I think the real next questions are, why do they work? Can we figure out some kind of broader principles from psychology and human interactions that can teach us something deep about how people talk and how people are persuaded? And then I think the next question is also, on what other issues can you effectively persuade someone? How can these types of conversations be applied more directly to issues of politics or racism or Islamophobia or whatever it may be?
Josh Kalla, co-author along with David Brookman of Durably Reducing Transphobia, a field experiment on door-to-door canvassing. Josh, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Virginia.
And David Fleischer is project director at the Leadership Lab, which did the canvassing. David, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's a real pleasure, Virginia. Thank you.
You can read more about the study and an article about David's work. It's from the New York Times. The links are at wordofmouthradio.org.